Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.
Wow, nice, very nice. Okay, cuz, who produced that? Cuz? Going on here?
Can you hear me?
Guys, are you up? Okay, are you there now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I don't know what happened there. I lost audio and everything. I got bounced out. I just had to come back in. I'll be darned.
Okay.
Did you hear your ad play?
I did hear it play. Did everyone else hear it playing, I hope? Or should we play it one more time?
Let's play it one more time.
Anyone charged with a criminal matter has the right to have their case heard before.
Wrong one. Excuse me. Oh, what a night.
Did you know that elders
and
others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.
There we go.
Yeah. All right. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, that was excellent.
Thank you. That was excellent. Thank you. It was Jessa Jeremiah and the Madison television station, the TVW, and they did that.
Wow. How nice.
Yeah.
How nice. We're all going to have to send them a thank you note.
You know what?
Yes.
That would be so amazing. And you can find them on Facebook. Just Google TVW. And you know how it all came about. You know, sometimes I'm like, why did I do this bakery? Oh, my gosh. I'm so tired. I'm working way too many hours, and then something really amazing like this happens, you know, and the only reason
right.
is because of the relationships that I made. And I've been doing
right.
the restaurant show in Wisconsin restaurants. I go on, you know, every so often, and I bake something and we do a demo, and we usually go down and film that down at the studio. And so I think I've been doing it like on and off for about 4 years. And so I've gotten
uh-huh.
to know everybody there. And every once in a while, you know, once the cameras are done rolling, we'll talk about, you know, different things. And I had told about NASGA, and we had talked about, you know, everything that happened, you know, with with Harvey and the stories. So anyway, back in December, and this is how it all came about, and I'm just so humbled and honored that I got to be part of it. So in December, when it was, we was going to be our television show, and I thought, why not, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to come up with the topic, like, what are we going to do? So I ended up having Santas Without Chimneys come on to the show, and I have to brag about Santas Without Chimneys. It's a local group here in Madison, and they do Christmas for homeless children, and it was started by a woman named Chaos, and it grew and grew. I think they served almost 800 families this last year. Well, they were behind in funding because unfortunately Chaos's mother passed away this past summer, and she used to do farmers market and do a lot of fundraising, which we would help donate bakery for that. And she just didn't get all the fundraising done like she had in the past because she was caring for her mother. And so here comes Christmas, and there's more people in need than ever. And I didn't know all this, that they were behind on funds, but I thought, we did a fundraiser at Rosie's and we had Santa come, and it was just a great event. And I think it was our third year that we've had Santa come to Rosie's. And I just thought, you know, hey, would Santa like to come and be on the restaurant show, and we could talk about Santas Without Chimneys and have cookies, and Santa can approve my cookies. And we ended up doing it. And there were some different businesses, and I should call them out. Off Broadway Draft House donated money, George's Refrigeration donated money, and Action Fence donated money, as long as some of our regular customers, and Rosie's Coffee Bar and Bakery donated money. And we raised, between everyone, we raised $660 for Santas Without Chimneys. And then it was aired on the Wisconsin restaurants, and everyone saw it, and they had so many funds come in that they ended up having all the money that they needed to serve all the people, that all the homeless children that needed, you know, gifts for Christmas.
That is wonderful. Yeah.
So I was telling Jessa, I said, Jessa, I just have to thank you for letting me do this, because it was kind of chaotic in the filming, because I didn't know that all these kids were coming to film. Usually you can bring, you know, one or two other guests. Well, we had a studio full of kids, and if you go back and watch the show back in December, it was a great show. I said, I didn't know everyone was coming, but we sure packed the house there and the studios. And I told her about how much fundraising we did because we were able to do that show, and just what a wonderful thing. And what happened is, Jessa is so sweet. It made her think. She called me, I think, a couple weeks later, and she's like, Kaz, I have this great idea. I want to do a commercial for a charity that you love. And I told her about the different local charities that I love here in Madison. And then I said, I do have a national charity that I love, too. I don't know if that would be our, you know, I didn't know if it was going to be our appropriate commercial that we were going to do this project for. And when I started to tell her about NASCA, she thought about it, and she says, you know what, Kaz? That's the charity that we're going to do. And I just couldn't believe it. So when we were done, we talked about all the details and everything that we were going to do. And I remember calling Elaine. I probably woke her up or something, calling Elaine and chatting and crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, Elaine, guess what's going to happen? And I hooked those two up. And they did all the planning. They wrote all the content for what was going to be said. And I said, I will be in the commercial. I won't be in the commercial. I don't need to be a glory hog. It doesn't even need to be about me. And they ended up, Elaine had them put in Harvey's picture. So one of the pictures is Harvey and my father, and one of the pictures is Harvey and Bob. And so anyway, that was the commercial, and it's been playing here in the Madison area since last week, I found out. And we have it up on that YouTube link where people can see it, and NASCA can use it and share it. And it's all in part, like, I felt very honored, in part for my relationship that I had made doing the restaurant show. And I cannot believe that finally there's a television station that wants to support this cause. And they didn't charge me for to make the commercial. They did it out of the goodness of their heart. So I would love if people would send thank you letters, because they did not have to do that. And you know what? If I was about that, I would have had an address. But if you go to TVW on Facebook, I'm guessing you should be able to private message them. The address is over off of someone could Google it. It's over off of Raymond Road in Madison, Wisconsin, is where the studio is. But that would be so amazing. And again, the person who was behind it, her name is Jessa, J-E-S-S-A, and then Jeremiah. And if you just say Jessa, everyone will know who Jessa is. And she's a local television celebrity here in Madison, and she's just the sweetest thing. And I've known her for several years, and it's just been such an honor to work with her. We filmed something else. I think it's airing next week. We were just talking about being a Wibbick business and with the bakery. She's just been so good to me on so many levels. And then for her to open up her heart and do this for NASCA, because she knew it was a charity that I just really, really cared about.
Yes.
Meant so much. Yeah. And isn't it exciting? NASCA's first
it is.
It's airing right now in Madison.
Well, and I think it's important that, you know, to get this kind of recognition and to have it come out through this station. You know, us blowing the horn is one thing, but for them to come out and join us, I think is just absolutely astounding. We just don't get that most times, and I will make a special point, and I encourage everyone else to do the same thing, to please go over to their Facebook page. That's TVW, isn't it? And on Facebook. And send them a message, drop them a note, do something, and thank them for sticking their necks out here and putting this together. It's for all of us. NASCA, most especially, which that I have to say, that organization, there's no fabrication, there's no embellishment, there's no exaggeration. It's simply the facts and what's happening, where it's happening, who it's happening to, and one thing I have to say too, the one reason I have continued to work with them is there's none of this backbiting and name calling and accusations and the glory hogs are absent, of course, and but it sticks to the issue, and it does it with style, and it does it with grace, and that's what we need. I've seen NASCA referenced all over in Cornell Law and everything as a viable reference on this topic. That's how stellar their reputation is. That, you know, when they talk about the opposition to these guardianships, NASCA is always listed as a reference, as a verified reference on this. And I think that speaks a lot about their integrity. I truly do. Otherwise, they wouldn't put them in there. And I say it's always in conjunction with something they're writing about, getting rid of these courts, what's happening to people, how they're being stripped of their rights, their identity, their assets, everything. Their absolute life is taken from them. And so I will most definitely send them a note and thank them. Because of the COVID hoax, the summit this year is going to be a 10-hour webinar. I don't know how that's going to play out, but this is the only alternative. I would have voted for postponing it myself, but, you know, nobody asks me. I'm just a panelist. And I submitted for our panel, of course. And but what we may have to do is each of us make a video not exceeding 15 minutes. And then once you get that done and you make a statement, I tried to figure out how we could all be on a multi-screen, you know, but I think that's going to get too complicated. And but we'll talk more about that later. I don't know. This is the best they can do because, of course, no more than 10 people can get together unless you're a corporation or your Home Depot or your Walmart, or you know, you have to be somebody special. We're non-essentials. And we'll get that all figured out as we go. Lord. then cause over here in Minnesota, we have got bills coming out that honest to God would make you throw up. You can tell that these fiduciary corporations, particularly a very infamous one here through Wisconsin, North Dakota, and Minnesota, it promotes itself all over the place as this warm, fuzzy, gee, we love you all, and we're going to take care of you group. They've got their hooks in our legislature, and quite deeply. We're seeing bills come out that are codifying into law, for one thing, the right of guardians to break into wills and trusts, which the judge was doing it before, had no authority to do so, but did. But now they're doing it so that the guardian can do it. They can remove beneficiaries and replace them with one of their choosing, even if it's themselves. They can now isolate people in out-of-state facilities. Please give me one rational reason you would have to do that, other than to isolate that individual and to antagonize the family. But they can now isolate by stashing them in a facility out of the state. Isolation. They simply codifying into law that at the guardian's whim, basically, they can isolate. If basically what it got down to is if it will make their job as guardian easier. It isn't about the person they captured. And these people are hostages. They truly are. They're hostages, and they're being extorted. And but we're seeing all this come out. I don't know where all this is going to end up. I've been asked to come to D.C. nonetheless. The summit was going to be from the 28th to the 31st, including the Marcel's Film Festival. And I've been asked to come out a week early to meet with various people to accommodate everybody's schedule. And I have been offered some funding to help with that, so I'll probably be doing that. But we'll all get together, all of us girls, and see what we can get done about doing these videos. And I don't know, because I don't know where we're going to go. I don't even want to bring up that virus thing, but I have read where they are expediting via phone and video conferencing guardianships. It's like a feeding frenzy. They are expediting these guardianships. And what the big deal is at this moment, other than people are diverted with this faked up virus, and I don't know. They're just doing 1,000 miles an hour on this stuff. But I still contend, Kaz, that what we are seeing is a culling globally, but especially here in the United States, of the elderly, the chronically ill, people who have long-standing illnesses would be subject to this. And the one thing they will not gather stats on, refuse to acknowledge, is the correlation of the flu vaccine to this particular type of pneumonia that is occurring. The flu vaccine increases your chances by 36%. Of 4 different strains of this virus, one of them being this horrendous pneumonia. And now they're already hawking, get your flu vaccine. It may help. Yeah, and it may kill you. I don't know when, I just don't know when people are going to clue into the fact that you cannot intentionally infect yourself with mutated viruses, fungus, bacteria, the DNA of non-related species, heavy metals, mercury, thimerosal, polysorbate 80, a drug that's the equivalent of formaldehyde, another that's the same as antifreeze. And you think you inject that in your body and you have protection from what? You just made yourself sick. And this all scares me to death. And of course, the other part of this cause, and I know you've been paying attention to this too, is the rampaging numbers of deaths in these nursing homes. And now we have Cuomo and even the governor here in Minnesota ordering hospitals to move COVID patients to nursing homes. Why would you do such a thing? Why would you move sick people with this thing you say is a killer virus and affects the elderly more than anybody else? Why would you move sick people into that environment? And unless you intend for everybody to leave there in a body bag. I just can't believe this. And now it's running through the VA facilities. This thing's doing the job that they just couldn't get done. Otherwise, it's taking out a lot of these vets. We had, 47 at one VA home died?
Yeah.
It's
running rampant. I mean, it's running rampant in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, and out there in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to tell a quick story. Now, Pennsylvania, when I last looked up the statistics, and it's been a couple years, I wouldn't think it changed that much, but a third of the population in Pennsylvania are the elderly. So it's a great place for them to be guardians and to make a lot of money there, it appears. So anyway, Deb Clock, who was Harvey's guardian, I now know of two cases that she just decided, since this coronavirus stuff has started, that elderly person needs to be taken out of their home and put in a nursing home. I had heard she's been successful with one, and she's just, you know, doing her thing. The other one, I haven't talked to the people in a couple of weeks, so I don't know what's going on. But, you know, people are finding us because of NASGA, because of the things that we have putting out there in the internet and on Facebook. And it's, you know, you make yourself easy to find. All you have to do is write comments under some of these things, and that's how people will find you. And so I was found and just talked to different people. And now I think we know like 200 different victim families. I mean, it's just crazy what's going on. But I mean, I'm so glad that I can be found, because I remember when we were going through it, I would start Google searching, and the one Google search that I would find was NASGA. And this is, 8 years ago, it's been a while. And now there's so much more. Those same Google searches, I will find so much more. And I can only imagine, like, to think that you're the only one and that you're all alone and you're seeing this happen to your family, and then to all of a sudden find other people saying, this is wrong, they did this wrong, this is, you know, and to see that kind of stuff, it gives them hope, but it also has to have them very terrified as to that they are now caught up in this, you know, cabal racket. But they're finding us, and we're talking about, you know, wow, I cannot believe that a guardian who actually would care for their ward thinks, you know, I know you've been living in your house by yourself for all these years, but it's time to go in a nursing home in the middle of a global woke pandemic. And let's put you in a place where people aren't surviving. I don't understand how that's being allowed.
I don't either.
What? But it is.
That sounds
they're
like
getting away with
premeditation.
They're getting away with it.
That's
And the reason they're getting away with it is the household.
Not only that, but they also, the federal government is desperate, as are state governments, to be rid of the elderly. I had that one lady from one of the representatives' office here say that she said they couldn't get rid of probate because it saved the state millions of dollars each year. And I corrected her. I said, no, it doesn't save the state. It makes the state millions of dollars. I said, through that block grant that you get, I said, where many millions are earmarked for senior care and services, but we don't know if they ever saw a dime of it because it all goes straight into the treasury, no strings attached. And, you know, so we have this going on. These probate courts do perform a service for the state and the Fed. They are culling the elderly. And rather than and families, we're watching the theft of generational wealth as families are disinherited through this process.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who has the right to do that? If you want your kids to have what you had, whether it's valuable or it isn't, who is someone else to come in there simply by virtue of them claiming you're incapacitated, which, like we say, can mean anything?
Yeah.
And decide that your children aren't getting the things you wanted to leave to them. Why? Why should you be allowed to do that?
And yet they do. Yeah, they're. I mean, they just. They have a playbook, and so as the more I meet people, it's the same pattern, and it's not over. Everyone thinks, okay, once my loved one has passed away, I'm done with these people. No, you're not, because now the next thing is they're going to contest the wills, they're going to get the house, they're going to get everything, and they enjoy it. They're getting everything.
Yes.
It's been, I've watched it all. It's still, Harvey has been passed away actually 4 years now. They're still contesting his will, and I mean, they'll, and then they charge fees while they're, you know, guardian. I can't remember what it's called. Some, they give the money to like a lawyer to watch the money, but somehow the money dwindles down, because if you really are a good money manager, aren't you supposed to like gain money, make money, you know, make the portfolio grow? But they have these special talents. They know how to make them dwindle down to nothing. But,
And what I love is after somebody has passed on, and it can be 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, that guardian will keep filing along with the attorneys into the court against that estate, and it will say to benefit the ward. I keep asking, what is it you are doing for that dead person that is of any benefit to them? What could you possibly have done? But they're never asked for an explanation. But everything is always to benefit the ward, even after they've passed away. And it's just one of the most disgusting things that goes on in this country. I want to say something. I just got a note here from a lady named Brenda. And she said to tell you she loved the ad, and she is going to go to TVW and send them a thank you note. And she said she thought the ad was wonderful. And then she put out here, she said, and to you and Cosmos, thank you for not being glory hogs.
Thank you, Brenda. Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited that they're going to get some great positive feedback. And you know what? The more positive feedback that we can give to all the different media outlets that do these great stories, the more they're going to want to do it. And, you know, the more views we're getting. And so thank you. Thank you so much, Brenda. I bet you she just inspired more people to do it.
Yes. Well, here's a lady named Lori. She said the ad was wonderful. It's about time. Thank you, cause. Here's one from Larry.
Oh, no, thanks to me.
He's in Madison. He said, we'll be stopping by Rosie's and thank Cause in person. Tell her we all appreciate this. Here's another one. Going to TVW now and going to give them a big thank you and a hug and a kiss.
Oh, my God,
wonderful.
I'm going to cry.
messages flying in all over here.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, everyone.
Get something to eat too, because the food is wonderful. And go ahead.
And we're doing. I'll do my little commercial. We're doing curbside pickup, so you can call ahead. And when you come, you can come in and order too. You just aren't allowed to sit at the tables, and you can order. And if you don't want to come in, just call when you get there. We'll run it out to your car, or we have a little table. We'll put it on the table, and then you can come and grab it. We're trying to do our curbside pickup, but we're getting ready to. We're so busy, Marty, at the bakery, not on the food or the coffee end, but in the bakery part. And I am so blessed. So many people bought cookies. I was actually shipping cookies out today, even.
Wow.
So many people have gotten cookies. Thank you so much, everyone. But we are turning away bakery orders because we can't even handle it. I just hired a new baker. She started today. But we're getting ready to do what we are the fulfillment center for 1-800-Flowers, Amazon, and Sherry's Berries. And we've been doing this for, I think, like 5 years now. We had a record month in April. The whole company had a record month for selling fruit bouquets. So anywhere in the United States, if you want to send for Mother's Day, you can send flowers, but you can also do something really unique. We have these little cutters, and we cut the pineapple to look like a flower. It'll look like little flowers with a little grape in the middle. So those are just going crazy, and I'm a little nervous, like how I'm going to pull this off. But somehow, because I have a great team, we always pull it off. But thank you, everyone, for supporting us there in Madison. I am been beyond humbled. Everyone sees me cry at work. I am like the biggest baby. They're like, now what? I'm like, well, now somebody wrote me a nice card and they bought a gift card. And You know, they're getting so used to seeing me cry all the time.
Yeah.
And they're happy tears. I am just extremely humbled. I mean, Rosie's is the underdog. We're just a tiny little place. We're not the big name, restaurant in Madison. And to know that we're hanging in there and people have been supporting us so much has been, I'm just blown away that we have 11 employees. So that just shows how small of a little bakery that we are with our 11 employees. And thank you everyone for helping us.
Things like they are today, the fact that you can keep 11 employees working says a lot about you.
We're down to four employees because the high school kids aren't working. And then there was some part-timers that were making coffee and more working the cashier. So they're not working either, but we're not working that want it to work. So the high school kids, they have school, they're doing school totally different. They're all online. So we hope to have them all back when this all ends. I have great high school kids that work there.
Wow.
And we do have the other thing. I have three special needs employees, and none of our special needs employees are working right now either.
Okay.
I miss them. I need a hug from them.
Well,
yeah.
And then you'll get arrested for not social distancing. That is such a load. You know, they keep the parameters of this thing keep changing all the time. And, you know, what this virus is and does. But we've got the second Navy ship rolling in that is infected with this virus. Now, what they don't want people to know or talk about is that they all recently were vaccinated for the flu. And you ask yourself how this virus got on two naval ships that were out. Please, somebody explain to me how that happened. But you remember during the Iraq War, we had that Navy ship that they all got the flu shot, and 122 of those sailors died. They had it quarantined out at sea. And I'm telling you, stop doing this, people. Stop doing it. This thing, and you know what kills me about that, Kaz, is they say, you know, it may not prevent the flu, but if you get it, it won't be as bad. How do you know? Won't be as bad as what?
Yeah.
And if you get the shot and you get the flu, well, you know, and the thing is, you don't have the wild virus. You don't have the naturally occurring virus that, you know, changes every year because there's no way they can predict that. So whatever the vaccine is, it's an old virus that's been mutated.
Right.
So you cannot possibly immunize against that. But you have just made yourself sick. And all you people who get vaccines, please read the circulars. It says right in them that for the next 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the vaccine, you are shedding all the crap you were infected with. You are the threat to public health. And if your vaccine is as magical as you think it is, then me not being vaccinated should not be of any concern to you. You've got your magic protection. You got your vaccine. So, but no, I'm not riding with this one at all. And, you know, and they always target elderly people. In 2010, when we had that big harangue about the flu, they marketed, pushed heavily that vaccine to the elderly and to pregnant women. The CDC finally fessed up that for 2010, behind that vaccine, there was a 2,300% increase in miscarriage.
Oh.
I thought, well, they got the job done there. In the elderly, they said, and they always use the word efficacy. Efficacy means when we apply the vaccine to a control group, to however many, let's say 100 people, all of them with a fabulous medical record indicating that they could withstand this shot without having any adverse events or fall over dead. And they say, oh, the efficacy is 94 to 95% effective, successful. Really? Well, let's look at efficiency. Efficiency is what you want to look for. And that is when the vaccine is applied across the population, broadly, without any filters. Now your efficiency drops down to 4 to 5%. The other 95, 96% either suffered severe reactions or fell over dead. And in that same year, marketing this vaccine to the elderly, there was a massive spike in elderly deaths directly attributed to the vaccine. So please think about what you're doing. But on the other hand, in these nursing homes, I don't know of one that does not mandate a flu vaccine in order for you to be admitted into one. And I plan in the works there. I see a plan in the works. I just don't think this is all that it's cracked up to be. And I don't know. I don't know. But it seems like everything is targeted at the elderly. How to get rid of them quickly, but how to rob them blind before they go. And even after they die, to continue to try to get those assets, you know. And
I want to know. So what happens when, like, a guardian grows old? Like, do they get to live to be like 80 or something, or does someone, or do they, like, are they like sharks? Like, they just go after each other? Because I can't imagine.
Well,
you know, here's a guardian,
see,
and now they've got to have like a lot of money. I mean, that's a really good target. What happens to them? Are they immune? What happens?
See, this, somebody's not doing some linear thinking, because you've set the groundwork for your own demise. And by accumulating this massive amount of wealth that you've stolen from other people, you've indicated that this type of behavior is quite acceptable. So eventually you are going to get to the point where you are viewed as a target. And having been a guardian previously, you know what's coming. No, you're not going to be exempt from this. No. There's many of us out here who will see to it you're not exempt from this. And I still say, when these people get to really on the prowl and they start preying on numerous people and pulling all these stunts, I think they should be immediately guardianized, because they have demonstrated that there is something mentally wrong. They are incapacitated mentally. They're not thinking straight. And they need to be locked away for their own protection and for the protection of the public. I truly think they should be guardianized. I think we should file emergency petitions to have these guardians, who have tortured so many people in this system, to have them guardianized and put somewhere where they can't hurt anybody else. I truly do think that. And
I think that would be an excellent idea. The thing is that what judge could you file that with? Because I feel
they'll get protection. Yeah, you need to do a couple of these judges, too, that have tormented people in court. You know what I'm saying? Everything pivots around that judge. That's the facilitator. That's who makes sure everything hums. He's always working with the same guardians, the same attorneys, the same, you know, agencies and personnel. He's always there. There's these little rackets that run. And then you see the same people show up time after time after time in front of the same judge, and the cases go exactly the same way. No matter what the rights are, no matter what is glaringly inappropriate, they'll go along with it. And so I think in the scheme of things, the judges first. These people who helped facilitate all this and encourage this and made this happen. Because it wouldn't take much for one of them to say, you don't have the right to do that. Well, you said this person is crazy or this or that. Where's your evidence? They never do those things.
Oh, absolutely. No.
You know,
they're running rackets.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, the thing is, Kaz, if it's that obvious to people out here like you and me, don't tell me the Supreme Court of your state isn't aware. Okay? Or that the Supreme Court of the United States isn't aware. Or that the DOJ, either state or federal, isn't aware. So what does that say about our government, our judiciary, the Justice Departments, the Attorney Generals? What does that say about those people? That they know this trafficking of things is happening, and how it's being done, and what a clear violation it is of constitutional rights, and just of people and their person. And they sit there and say nothing and make up excuses for why they didn't do anything.
Yeah, they obviously, I believe, somehow they're profiting from it. And so the fact that you would make money off of it you'll turn the blind eye to it, and it's at so many different levels. Or you figure, or here's one, you don't want to be that whistleblower because you're afraid, you know, you don't want to lose your job or whatever. I think that would be, and you know, we go to whistleblower summit. What about that? Most of them, they don't want to be the whistleblower. They just want to, you know, not be the one. They just go along with it. And yet, when you go along with it, you're part of it. And I don't know if people really realize that about themselves. If you're turning a blind eye to that, you're part of it.
Yes. And the other thing is, Kaz, these people who call themselves judges, these people have a responsibility and a duty that they are not adhering to.
Oh, and, absolutely.
But the other side of it is they don't get put in that position unless they're on board with the program. They are assuring those who put them in there beforehand that they'll carry on as the person before them did. And the most I've ever seen happen is they just get shuffled off to another department like family court where they can really raise hell and tear families apart. But those people don't get in those positions without being on board with the program. So think about that the next time. And I want to say something here. If I hear this one more time, I think my head's going to explode about these bills that come out. And there might be one little caveat or two in there that really amounts to nothing. But people go, oh, well, at least they did this. That's not enough. That's nothing in the scheme. Well, I'll take what I can get. Stop it. Stop it. You take what you can get. You just got screwed. What is it you think you got there? I'm not a take it what I can get person. I want what I want, and I want it the way I want it, and I don't want anything else. And if I can't have what I want, skip the crap. And go ahead.
Yeah. And, well, it's not that you just want it for you. You want it for everyone. It's not just about us. It's not just about me. We're not the glory hogs. We're not like, you know, pass this bill for me. Pass this bill for we, the people. All of us.
Yes.
We want it for all of us.
Yes. And that's it. That's what I'm saying. This is, and it isn't about me. It's about
I want
this change
to
protect people. I want this change because what you're doing is insidiously wrong. You have no right to do this to other human beings. No right whatsoever.
No, not
and
at all.
To have these people, you know, that to me the bills are insulting, and they'll enrage you when you actually read through them. Once you learn how to read legalese in these bills and see what they're actually doing and how they've just basically bitch slapped you two or three times, writing into this thing, and they dress it all up like this thing about stashing people out of the state. Please give me one rational reason why anyone should be allowed to do that. One bona fide reason why some damn guardian should be able to take an elderly person and stash them outside of the state where they live and away from the family, and many times not even tell the family where that person is.
Maybe they want to share the wealth with their cabal that seems to be in little pockets around the country. You know, I have heard there are some good judges out there. There really are. They're far and few between. And, you know, I'd like to someday have someone on the show that says, hey, I went to court and there was no drama and everything was good. But, you know, but they, if they can pass them off, like let's say, remember when April Parks fled Las Vegas?
Yes.
Where did she flee to? Do you remember?
Pennsylvania.
Yes, she did. Why is that?
Yep.
So what I'm thinking is that, you know, as we do these topics, have you noticed there's more counties that seem to come up more than other counties?
Yes.
So if they can pass them off to other states, I'm guessing they could work their network more at a national level. It's for their benefit. I'm thinking that.
Yes.
And so they can, you know, they don't care about the family. Who can, this is, you know, they're raising cattle, basically.
Yeah.
But that must
and
be why they want to do it. Yeah, they're going to, because they all seem to be organized. They're all hanging out. What is it? It's the American Guardian Association.
Yeah.
They're all affiliated. I have found many names in that organization that I have seen in some unscrupulous documents.
Have you seen their promotional pages? My God, it'd just give you the warm fuzzies. Why, they're doing everything to make the care of the elderly top-notch, and they care so mm-hmm. much for them, and blah, 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 blah. Shut up, you bunch of wolves.
Yeah.
Ooh, that stuff just makes me mad. And they get away with it. They get away with it.
Yes.
And just,
yes,
I don't
do.
Know. Yeah. Cosley, we're going to switch gears here just a little bit. You have a brother named Bert who has special needs. And you wanted
and
to talk about him just a little bit this evening.
I want to make it a positive. You know, I'll tell my sister.
Yeah.
My sister is the guardian of my brother. My parents have passed away for a long time. And anyway, they set up things for, they knew that they were going to be gone, and they set up things. So my brother, my sister's a guardian, and that's Mary. And now we're going to tell the good guardian story. So right now, my sister could even come on the show. She's devastated right now. My brother and I do not think that where he is staying has done anything wrong. He's in the St. Coletta system over there in Illinois. He used to live up in Jefferson, Wisconsin. Now he's in Illinois, and I do believe they've done everything they could to have taken good care of him. So I am not pointing my finger at them. And that is, I hope that that's a big testimony, because I'll point my finger at people really fast. But he is in a special needs assisted living through the St. Coletta system. And I have actually been in the facility on numerous occasions. It's not all fancy granite countertops or anything like that, but the people who are employed there have been wonderful. Well, we found out, actually I found out on my birthday last week, that one of the residents had tested positive with coronavirus. 2 days ago, we found out that my brother had it, and some of the residents had already gone into the hospital. Now today, my brother's gone into the hospital. Every single resident of this special needs assisted living has coronavirus, and all the employees except for two.
Oh my God.
So it's really hit home. And my brother is, because of his disabilities, he is to the point, he wasn't always in a wheelchair, but he is now in a wheelchair. He's 54 years old. His birthday is later this month. And, you know, he has gone down in health. So he definitely is not in the, he's definitely in, not in good percents. And I've done my crying. I think, how many times did I talk to you today, Mari? I think we had a whole different show planned. And then I found this out at about 11 o'clock. I called you on the phone and I cried, and we changed gears. And really what I've been doing is just, I've been thinking about him, and just, you know, because I'm worried, and we're asking everyone to pray for him and all the residents there. This is, you hear like of this coronavirus, well, that's affecting people, and all of a sudden it affects your own family and my brother.
Yeah.
And I feel bad, and he's not doing well. And we don't know. I can't go visit. This is just a very awful thing. But what it made me think is, I grew up with a special needs brother my whole life. So it's all I know. And I never think anything different. I just think, you know, this is me and my family. And it kind of, as I started sharing with some of my coworkers, some of the crazy stories of my brother, and I'll tell a few because they're so darling, it made me realize, you know what? Not everybody has a sibling who has special needs. And I first and foremost believe it is so much harder to be the parent of someone with special needs, just based on the things, you know, as I became an adult and talking with my mom. And, you know, I think that he was such a gift to her, but she also, the guilt, like, what did I do wrong? I can't imagine, you know. But as a sibling, it's totally different, and your worldview on your whole life is totally different when you grow up as a sibling of someone with special needs. And so I'm the oldest, and then he was born 13 months later. And then there's my brother and sister. They're twins, and they were born after him. So there's four of us. Bert has, you know, special needs. And when he was born in 65, what we always thought was a matter with him, and this is so not PC to say, but I'm just going to say, this is what I was grown up and was told, that he was mentally retarded. And that is not what the word that you use today, but I don't really know what the diagnosis is, because he's gotten so much older. We're thinking maybe a form of autism. You know, I don't know,
uh-huh.
But I mean, this is, you know, we're going, but I'm trying not to be offensive to anybody. I'm just telling, this is the terminology that I was raised to be told. This is what has happened to your brother. And I don't mean to say it. I hope I haven't offended anybody, because I'm not saying it. I don't use it in my conversation, but I just want to show how I was raised. And this is the terminology that
yes.
I was told, this is what's the matter with your brother. And we do think it was some form of autism. When he was a teenager, he started to have seizures. And so grand mal seizures, sometimes four times a day. So just all the seizures, all the medications, and his brain is very fried. So how he functions today is so much different than how he functioned when he was younger. He had a bag boy job where he could walk to the grocery store and he would bag people's groceries. He did that for about 10 years. And so there was
wow.
a time when he was a lot more functioning than he is now, where he's just in a wheelchair and sometimes doesn't know who people are and has
uh-huh.
definitely gone down in health. But growing up with him, and here's my brother, you know, he always went to a different school than we went. He, being probably that he's more autistic, likes to live in his own little world and didn't really like to play with the rest of us. And my mom always saying, you better include your brother, you know, always wanting him to be included in everything. And so it was just normal for me to grow up with him as my brother. I do believe, I am thankful for the things that I've learned in life and who I am because of being around him. I definitely believe that anyone with special needs knows the difference between right and wrong. And one thing that I have noticed, that some people, when they get around people with special needs, coddle them or treat them differently. And you really shouldn't be doing that. They know the difference between right and wrong, and they will have more respect for you if you hold them accountable to their behavior than to just let them get away with everything. And that's just
wow.
like different friends that I've had that have had special needs siblings. It's just something that we've noticed. Just, you know, my brother, when there are certain people in the family who would hold him more accountable, my Aunt Lily. So one summer, he has to go live with my Aunt Lily for the summer because he was a little bit, he's kind of a bad boy. And she whipped him in shape. And you would have thought that he would have thought she was the big meanie or whatever. He absolutely adored her. She whipped him in shape. He used to say, oh, can I help you do that? And he was so used to people say, no, I'm good. And then you say, yeah, you can help me. Well, then he didn't want to help you. Little things like that. Is just hold him accountable. Like, yeah, you can help me do the dishes. You can help me do these things. And that's what I really love about the inclusion with letting people come into the workplace and having a job, but holding people accountable, like do a job that actually has to be done, not just, you know, wipe the same table over and over. Like, let's make a difference. And that's
yes.
what I love about it. Rosie's, we have three right now. We have three special needs employees. And the one thing that their job coaches have said to me is we don't want this to be charity work. We want this to be that someone is coming in and they're doing something that someone else would have to do, and make them have a purpose. And everyone needs a purpose. So Bert was living in, we would go to the, they call it the workshop. So there's this workshop in the south side of Chicago, because that's where he's at right now. And they go and they have variety Pepsi packs. So if you buy one of those variety packs on the south side of Chicago, they were repackaged. So you'll get like six Mountain Dew, six Pepsi, six Diet Pepsis, and six I don't know what other. And so what they would do is they would unpack the cases and then repack into the variety cases. And they would get paid based on how many they would do. They also would roll up the posters for movies and things like that. Now, you're not going to pay them minimum wage because no one really wants to have a variety pack and pay all these people minimum wage. You just can't do it, and we need to realize that. But they would get paid by the piece. And there was a McDonald's that was there, and they all take turns working in the McDonald's. So anyway, they're having a purpose, and it's so important that everyone has purpose. But the thing that I love about having been his sibling is I feel comfortable to go and talk to anybody, no matter what might be. You know, I think we might call people like normal, not normal, and that's really wrong of us to say, like, oh, well, we're normal. I mean, really? Am I that normal? But someone with special needs is just different than us, and there's still so much value in that person, and they turn us into the different person than we would have ever thought, and I think it brings out so much compassion. And I have a couple fun stories that I want to share. So one of the stories was my wedding. So Tom and I are getting married, and the day before the wedding, you always do the practice, and he was going to be an usher. So we were, the bridesmaids and the groomsmen were practicing walking down the aisle and stuff, and he wasn't getting to do anything. And so once again, there he was feeling left out. And I can only imagine that's his whole life, just left out. He didn't have a lot of friends. We tried to include him, but, you know, as a young child and your mom telling you, you have to play with him, you have to play with him. And it was just not the same. Like, you try to play with them, but there was still a lot of times where I would have to say he was just left out, and he didn't have the motor skills to go running and play basketball, or, you know, it's just, so here, there he was feeling left out again. And that was not intentional at all. And he goes up to mom and he says, you know, here I, there's nothing for me to do. This is stupid. Well, the next day is the day of the wedding. And so now he has to seat everybody in their proper seats. And you know how usually it's like the bride side sits on one and the groom side sits on. Well, he's just going to seat you wherever he felt like seating you. You were sitting wherever. And it was so cute because I don't really care where people sit at my wedding, if what side of the aisle you're sitting on. So he just sat everybody wherever he felt like you're going to sit. And what are you going to do? No, I'm supposed to sit on. Nope, you're just going to sit where he puts you. And then it was really funny. There was this woman who was like the church coordinator. And the wedding's running behind because my brother's not seating people fast enough. And she had her undies all in a bunch. And she comes up to my mom. And so here, I have to back the story. If you would look at my brother physically, you wouldn't know when he was younger, when he was in his 20s, when I was married, you wouldn't know there was anything wrong. He doesn't have Down syndrome. So looking at him, and he's all dressed up in his tux, all clean shaven, you did not know that anything is wrong. And I think people need to realize that when you look at somebody, you don't know, because now obviously he's in a wheelchair and he looks different. But when he was in his 20s, he looked the same as everybody else. So this woman did not know. She didn't know. But anyway, so she's all upset that he's doing everything wrong. And she comes up telling my mom and I, he's not putting people on the right side of the pews. And she was just so upset. And now the wedding's running behind. And my mom and I just looked at each other and we just kind of shrugged, like, well, who cares? So anyway, he finally gets everybody sat, because I wasn't going to go up there and seat people. And my mom wasn't, like, we just didn't care. The wedding will start when he is done seating everybody in their spot. And then, you know what he said, and this is the comment that just, like, touches my heart always. He says to my mom, "Mom, I had the most important job of all." And I love that story.
I had the most important job of all. Wow.
Yeah, because he had to seat everybody. And what made the story so much better is that he totally did it wrong, but who cares? Like, he didn't really do it wrong. I don't really care where everyone's seated. But the church lady was so upset. And that's I just think that's what just made the story. And he thought he had, you know, here's one day he thought he was left out, wasn't doing anything. And the next day he has the most important job of all, because he had to seat everybody. You didn't walk into that church until he sat you. So you're going to stand there and you're going to wait until he seats you. And he's putting you wherever he's going to put you. And I just love that story.
Yeah,
I have, yeah, and you know, those are, that's my family, and that's, you know, and Tom was fine. He was like, your brother's messing up. They didn't care. And that's just what, that's just one of my fun stories. My other story,
yeah.
Now sometimes Bert could throw some temper tantrums, so he wasn't always, well, you know, yeah, he gets mad. And so I was bringing Tom down to meet my parents for the first time. And when you have a special needs sibling, you don't, like, pre-warn people because you don't think to. You know, I don't think to. Oh, you just don't, because it's like you're normal. This is my family and this is your normal. And you definitely don't pre-warn anybody. You're just like, hey, come on and meet my family. And so he comes down. And so the next morning we're sitting, we're having breakfast, and it was Tom and my dad and I, and we're, you know, eating. And my brother, he's like a, you know, a hairy guy. He has to shave, like, you know, some guys have to shave all the time. He's one of those. So my mom always wanted him to be clean shaven, and he was always missing splotches and had like little, and she's always trying to make sure that he had good hygiene and that he was shaved right.
Mm-hmm.
So she says to him, you missed some spots. Let's go, you know, back and kind of get that cleaned up. Well, he flies off the handle. And now these were the temper tantrums. A lot of special needs people will have temper tantrums. He starts banging his head in the wall, hitting himself and biting his arm. And my dad and I, because we're used to seeing this behavior, so my dad and I are just eating breakfast. And my husband, who had never been around this before, he's looking around going, does anybody, like, notice this is what's going on here? And we're just ignoring him, because that's what you do when he's, like, acting up.
Yeah.
Just ignore him. Just ignore him. Like, okay, you're going to bang your head in the wall? Okay. Well, that's why he has to wear a helmet now, because he would go banging his head in the wall. So anyway, I didn't pre-warn my husband, or I didn't pre-warn Tom, like, oh yeah, my brother will throw these fits and he'll bang his head in the wall and bite his arm, and you just ignore it. And so, you know, there's just kind of another story. It's not the cute story, but it's just kind of like that was my reality. Like, I wouldn't have thought anything of it. Now he would have grand mal seizures, and he would, you know, the medications for grand mal seizures, I have to say that many of these medications have probably saved his life. The seizures could be so severe that his brain would bleed, and he's still alive. But the seizures, he used to have about 4 a day, and so you were used to seeing him just lay on the ground having a seizure. And you're not supposed to stick your fingers in their mouth and hold their tongue back or anything. What you do is you just make sure that there's nothing around, you know, if they're standing, help them get down on the ground and just move everything around, like, so that while they're having a seizure, that they're not going to hit anything or get hurt any worse, you know. And then he just lays there until he recovers. And so you were used to just seeing him, you know, lay on the floor and have a seizure, because you can't call the ambulance every time. You know, this was 4 times a day until they could get the medications under control. So you were always, you know, if someone would come over, oh, no, he's fine, you know. And that was my normal. And I don't think people who don't have a special needs sibling, like, I don't think they can even fathom. And just, I think it just kind of hit me today as I've been thinking about them, like, what is, and as my sister and I were reminiscing all of the different stories, and there's so many more, just Bert stories. It's just all, he can be just a unique, lovely, lovely man and brother. But just that I'm so used to all these different stories and all these different things, and, you know, things that he does, you know, the happy things, the having his little fit things, and just so much that I just took for granted, like, that's life and that's how we all grew up. And I don't think that many people have that as their life experience. And I just thought it would be really neat to just kind of share it from a sibling's point of view, because there's so many parents' point of view. Yeah,
yes.
And so if we would really, everyone, you know, appreciate the prayers right now. We've been definitely walking down memory lane, thinking about him, the last few days, and especially today when we found out that he was admitted to the hospital and is not doing well. But I didn't know if any callers wanted to call, and I thought it would be fun to have happy stories, like my special needs story, and this is a happy one. I have one more really cute one. So he's living at St. Coletta's up there in Jefferson, and he had this roommate. And the roommate told me, and this is just so cute, because I always got to hang around with his friends too, and everyone is so darling. Did you know I don't just have the most beautiful eyes, Marty? I have the most beautiful eyeballs.
Oh.
And then his roommate would always tell me, you have the most beautiful eyeballs. And I've always thought, like, I have the most beautiful eyeballs. And just like those quirky little fun, lovable things.
Yeah.
That come out is there's like an innocence and a special needs person. It's like they never grew up and there's a child. They're just a child forever. And just to tell me that I have the most beautiful eyeballs, and I've never forgotten that I have the most beautiful eyeballs. They're not just beautiful eyes, the whole eyeball.
Yeah, I'll have to remind you of that from time to time.
That I have the most beautiful eyeballs.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's so many smiles that can be put on our faces when you are around people with special needs. And this guardianship thing, because, you know, it's not just the elderly that are being abused in guardianship. It's special needs people that are being, and there's a lot of stories of that.
Yes. And they, to me, that is just as sickening and heartbreaking as the abuse of the elderly, that you would take someone who's vulnerable on that level.
Yes.
And, you know, they still experience pain just like the elderly, but they experience pain. They have emotions and everything else. And to treat them in such a disrespectful manner and abuse them because you see them as less, and they do see them as less. It's okay because, after all, they're this or they're that. You know, it takes a special kind of ugly to do that to somebody that's just, oh, God, that makes me sick. To think about it. It truly does. Well, thank you for sharing all that, Kaz. You know, every once in a while we need some good stuff, not just the bad stuff. But we'll all be praying for Bert and keep us posted, you know, on how he's doing. And because, you know, I'm sure I just got a message here. Please update us on Bert whenever you have info.
Thank you.
Okay, so, and that is from Cornell. And I don't know who Cornell is. Thank you, Cornell.
Thank you, Cornell.
But anyway, yes, it's just, and here I got some other ones coming in, Kaz. Please ask Kaz to keep us updated. Okay, and this one is, we put Bert in the prayer chain. Okay, thank you. Yes, and so that makes me feel better. You know, I mean, it does. I love getting a positive response.
I'm crying, but they're happy tears. You know, it's just, I love that we can have positive shows, even like when we're in the midst of some very dark times, and like with the commercial coming out, and just to share some beautiful stories of people with special needs, and just how lovely they really are in our lives. And if you have someone that's special needs, it is such a treasure.
Yes.
I have a little dishwasher. Yes. We have a little dishwasher. She's been at my bakery for 6 years. And obviously she's not working right now. And I was just thinking about her today, man, I could really use a hug from her. She's so cute, but she's such a little stinker. She will hug and love on me so she doesn't have to get her work done. And who can resist this?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. But I just absolutely adore her. And I can sure, you know, I think about her and all her sweetness. And, I miss her hugs.
Wow.
Yeah.
But she probably would be in there with you, too. You know, I think, because I don't know about you, I think one of the worst things, and I think it happens to the elderly quite often, and then when they get caught in these guardianship, it's like it exacerbates that feeling that they have no value. Everybody needs to feel productive. They need to feel needed and wanted, and like they have something of importance to contribute to something, to anything. And when, you know, when we cut these people out
of everyday life, we're not only doing a disservice to them, but that we're doing it to ourselves. Because, like you say, many of these people are just sweethearts. I mean, they are just the gentlest, sweetest. They don't have malice. They, you know, aren't harboring any ill feelings towards anyone. And they just simply want to be accepted, and they want to be productive. They want to be included, not in some game. They want to be included in life. And to have a job, and to know they have to be there, and they're just like everybody else. What they're doing, I don't care what it is that they're doing, is important. It's important. And, you know, and people look down on different jobs because and say, well, I wouldn't do that, I wouldn't do that. Everybody who's working a job, whether it's flipping burgers, picking up the garbage, whatever it is, if it wasn't for those people, where the hell would you be? Somebody's got to do these jobs. Thank God these people are willing to.
I do it myself. Yeah. I have so many people. You know, I'm a pastry chef. The funniest thing I've had people, it must be so glamorous. You're a pastry chef. I clean the toilets. We rotate. I clean toilets. I take the garbage out. I can remember that one day when someone said it to me, that earlier that day, it was in the evening, you're a pastry chef. Oh, that must be so glamorous. You know, we watch too much Food Network. And, like, and just earlier that day, I had taken the garbage out and the bag broke. And there's, in a bakery garbage, there's a lot of egg, like cracking the eggs and the egg goo. This egg goo is running down my back.
Oh,
you know?
No.
I thought, it was very glamorous. And, you know, I wouldn't have it if I wouldn't have it any other way. I'll go, you know, clean the bathrooms but after my shift, not before I'm going to go bake again. But at the end of my shift, if I have to go clean the bathroom, I'll clean the bathroom. I'll take the garbage out. You know, I don't ever think that I'm beneath these, you know, or that I'm above these jobs. And I feel it makes me feel good to just go do those jobs, to just do anything that I would ask anybody else to do. And I don't get where people think they're better.
The thing is, when you do that, when you do whatever needs to be done, no matter what the job is, the rest of your employees or your coworkers will take a cue. You know, if you're willing to do it, when they get asked to do it, they tend not to be disgruntled. You know what I'm saying? Well, why me? You know, they've seen you do it. And so it's not like it's something that diminishes them. It's just part of the job. And
I could do a whole show for you of all the gross things I've cleaned working in the restaurant industry. I've been in the restaurant industry. I got to do the math. How old I was in? Almost 40 years. 39 years I've been in the restaurant industry. So it's all I've done. I have swept your floors. I have cleaned your tables. I've done all those things. And so that's all I know. So, Oh my gosh. That's a lot of years.
It is.
A lot of crazy.
And you know, when I look back over the years, different jobs that I've had to keep me and my kids going, you know, I think, geez, how in the heck did I do that? Because sometimes it was really hard labor. But you know, you had to take, especially as a woman, you had to take what you could get. And because a lot of times the good paying jobs just went to men. And so, you know, you always had to work twice as hard, get twice as dirty, be twice as tired in order to be considered of any value. And I'd like to think those days were over, but they're not. But I'm the same way. You know, I've managed several businesses and owned several. And whatever needs to be done, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And I always found that because of my willingness to do whatever needed to be done, when I needed somebody else to do it, I never got any flack, no blowback. Yep, Marty, I'll do it. And that's because you set the example. You set the example. It's all part of the job. Nothing is too menial. And I've also worked places where managers up above me, you know, just came short of telling you to massage their feet. They wouldn't want me to do that. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. Some people get so arrogant and uppity. But, yeah, this has been a good show. I've enjoyed this. I truly have.
Me too.
But
I want to, we're keeping it positive, and I hope everyone out there listening is feeling positive. I mean, it's such an ugly topic, and yet if we can, you know, my most positive thing is all the friends that I've made. Like, I would not know you, Marty. I mean, look at what Judge Ott did for me, the trajectory that my life took because of what he did.
Yes.
You know, now am I happy about what he did? No, but it's like changed my whole life journey, and I can't believe the things I've done. I can't believe a whistleblower summit. I was in D.C. at a whistleblower summit, and I'm actually talking to someone who stood behind the podium that had like a Senate seal, and that's a huge deal. It's just been it's been a crazy journey.
Somebody said that I needed to stand on a box the next time so they could see me. That is just sick. We were quite honored to be in that location last year, and panel did exceedingly well, and it got just a major response. And but you know what the best part of it was, Kaz, was, you know, that night at the townhouse where
we were all
staying.
Hung out.
Mary Kay. Yes.
And Austin
to me,
was there.
Austin was there, and we were all sitting around just talking and laughing and eating donuts and cookies that you brought, and
t-shirts.
And I was in my pajamas.
That was so much fun.
Yeah, if I'm not out on the street, I'm at home in my pajamas. That's just all there is to it. And that was. And I like that about it, because it's not just the event itself, which is important on many, many levels, but it's the networking and meeting everybody. The best part of the summit is meeting people that I've only known over the phone or from a radio interview. To have them travel, Elaine Mickman, to travel all the way there.
Yes, I was thinking of Elaine Mickman.
Yes.
And she's been on the show so many times. Yes.
Oh, that's a stellar lady.
She sends us weekly emails. We wouldn't have never met her, and I love her. She's darling. We talk on the phone every once in a while. Hey, Elaine, she's probably listening right now.
Yeah, she is probably more likely. But it's like, we had so many people come from states. I know the first year I did the summit, I was absolutely floored. We had people come from 14 states, from as far away as Oregon and Washington State, drove across country to be at that summit to support us on our panel and to meet me and the other panelists in person. I thought that was absolutely astonishing. I was so humbled by that. You just cannot. I just cannot tell you what that did to me, that people drove, people running up to me going, you're Marty. Oh, I'm, so-and-so, and just floored. How did you get here? I drove. Oh, my God. I wanted to come here to meet you. And, I wanted to meet, Danny Tate was on the panel that year, Brian Kinter. People wanted to meet them. You know what I'm saying? The message we have put out there, Kaz, has traveled a long ways, and it's touched a lot of people. And what I think is unfortunate for us is because of these glory hogs that have entered into this, we have to keep what we do, and what we're working on, under wraps. Not that we don't want people to know and hope that we make some headway, but the interference from these people, the constant upheaval, the constant attacking other people, and then falling back and claiming they're the injured party after numerous attacks. What I'm saying, and to keep them from interfering, inserting themselves into what you're trying to get done, think it's unfortunate. But it's for people, and I have people ask me, how come you don't talk about what you're doing? Because we don't want this interference. We're working hard to make these connections, to get these doors opened, to get something done. And when these people show up, and y'all know who they are, we don't have to say no names. When these people show up, everything falls apart. The group splinters. People are at each other's throats. And the fighting and the bickering and the name-calling and all, and making these caustic remarks, attacking what other people are doing,
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. We work too hard on this stuff and devote too much time to it. And go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, that's why I had to keep – back in December when I found out about the commercial, I wanted to share it with everyone, but I didn't want any Glory Hawk to find out and try and mess things up. So I had to – so the only people who knew about the commercial was you and Elaine and, of course, my sister. And I had to keep it secret because I was afraid of the Glory Hawk wrecking stuff. And if the Glory Hog finds out, I wonder what's going to get wrecked now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's so just so y'all know, it's not that we're not doing anything, just for self-protection and to keep from having what we're doing being derailed intentionally or otherwise. We just stay out of this stuff and stay off to the side and stay quiet. When we have something just like the commercial good to bring out to you, we'll do it. But in the interim, while we're working on all this stuff, and, you know, the other thing is we never ask for money. Cause contributes her time. I contribute mine. All of our show hosts on TS Radio do. Lawrence has been on with the USDA Hour now for, I think, 4 years, 5 years. And he doesn't get paid, but, you know, just has stellar guests on all the time. And this is a joint effort, but I think it's unfortunate the same people that constantly call for, we need unity, we need to do this, we need to join together, are the same people that are totally incapable of working in tandem with other people. And you know, it just, and I'm not interested. Don't come to me with stories, don't come to me with rumors and gossip, and I don't care what somebody else said. I know what I do. Yeah. I know what I say. And if y'all ought to know by now, if I got something to say, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. Go ahead.
There's that saying, there's no I in team.
I know.
The letter I is not in team. So
yeah, and it's not Glory Hawk either. Yeah.
I know.
I think what of the shows we've done over this last year, that show on Glory Hogs, it just resonated all over social media. It just resonated. The messages that came in behind that, and many of them were just hysterical.
And my husband's the one who came up with who told me the terminology of the Glory Hog. And then I looked it up, and it was like in the Urban Dictionary and everything. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to educate. It's so perfect, the Glory Hog.
It did. That thing resonated all over the place. One lady named Jane told me that she has listened to that show at least a dozen times and laughed her butt off every time. She said,
I might have to go back and listen.
She said, you guys just nailed it. She said, these people out here that constantly, she said, are causing all kinds of division and strife. Oh, and that's the new buzz phrase, by the way. It used to be conspiracy theorist. And then the second one, big one, was fake news. That's fake news. And now it's divisive. That's divisive.
Oh.
If you said it's divisive, you're being divisive. Oh, bite me.
I'm so offended.
But you know, and this jingoism that goes on all the time, and people will parrot this, and they'll parrot it and say it over and over, everything they don't agree with, that's divisive. Before it was fake news. Oh, shut up. And you know, I told one lady on my page, I said, will you quit with the fake news? I said, get a new line, will you? I said, go back to conspiracy theorist. I said, I could stomach that a lot better than I could fake news. And if you want fake news, turn on your TV. You can get all of it you want to. But anyway, because we're down to the last few minutes here, what you want to end up with?
Let's one more time remind everybody, if after the show, if they would go to Facebook TVW and send a message telling them thank you so much for producing the commercial. there's more things in the works. So if they see people are really interested in this topic and that they're getting engagement, I think they're going to keep doing the programming that we are hoping that is going to happen.
Excellent. I think that's excellent. And it just, you know, this is, like I say, this has been a very positive show overall. And I think we need to do those more often instead of all the doom and gloom
yeah.
all the time. Which, I mean,
yeah,
there's so much doom and gloom.
Yeah.
God knows
there is.
We got enough to go around. And, but this is, and thank you for sharing the stories about your brother. That was uplifting.
Oh, thank you for letting me.
Yeah.
It helps me heal for in this moment too. Thank you. And I thank you for being
right.
a phone call away for me to cry.
But that's all
we
right.
had it
Always
all planned
here.
This morning, and then I'm like,
yeah.
Marty, my world is just changing. You know, I had that. Well, we'll do the next topic next time that I had researched.
There you go. There you go. There's always another show coming.
Yes.
We're down to the last few minutes here. Kaz, thanks so much for coming on again tonight. I want to remind everyone that these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. It's still scheduled for July 28th through the 30th of July. I think I've got that all wrong.
Is it the 31st?
Yeah, the 31st. I'm having a brain glitch. I don't know what's wrong with me. But anyway, and they are making some alternate plans for the summit this year, and we'll let you know more on that. If you want a little scoop on that, you can go to the USDA show from last night, Whistleblowers, and Marcel Reed was on for about the first 15 minutes about talking about the possible changes to the summit this year because of all the social distancing and everything. And so you can get an update on it there. But we'll be updating you also as things move along. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and all the great messages and everything. Kaz, again, thank you. And as we sign off, we're going to play your new ad again. And with that,
thank
when this
you.
Ends, yep, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.